I'm Bobby Finger.
And I'm Lindsay Weber. Our podcast, Who Weekly, is everything you need to know about the celebrities you don't. Think of us as your cheat code to People Magazine, your glossary for Hollywood, a shortcut to understanding pop culture at large.
For the past 8 years, Who Weekly has been telling listeners everything they need to know about the celebrities they don't.
Who Weekly airs twice weekly with brand new episodes on Tuesdays and Fridays. Listen and follow Who Weekly, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Of the very latest lowdown. Joe, how you doing, buddy?
Thanks for having me on.
No, it's always a pleasure to have you on. So where do we stand right now? Let's begin with the big story here with Kirk Cousins. It doesn't appear, I know we keep hearing rumors here and there and everywhere, you know, visits to Chipotle in Cleveland and stuff about, the Titans are going to flip and try and get the number one pick. And I mean, pardon me, the Browns try and flip and get the number one pick from Tennessee, which I don't think they're going to be able to do. But, you know, a lot of speculation here. Are we to expect anything to happen here except the fact that he's not going to show up for voluntary workouts between now and the 1st of June, or are we just going to have to wait till after June 1 and see kind of where we go from there?
I think we're going to have to wait until after June 1, John. I just think that for, you know, the salary cap perspective, unless you could trade him before the draft and get some draft picks, then, you know, maybe that would have been on the table for the Falcons. But from what's been reported, it's not been on the table because Kirk Cousins doesn't want to be dealt until after the draft happens. And so for understandable reasons, I suppose, even though I would argue that I don't know if he can kind of count on going into any organization where they don't have some other plan at quarterback other than, you know, a late 30s guy like him who kind of has his last opportunity. But that's besides the point. It just doesn't seem realistic, and from my perspective, that this deal is going to get done until after June 1st, because if the Falcons are able to trade him after June 1st, they're basically able to wipe their hand, like dust their hands off, and that is that. They get the most amount of total savings on the contract, and that's why I think they're going to wait. It just doesn't have, you know, they're not as incentivized to do the deal before then if it's not going to be for a draft pick. And so, unfortunately, this is just going to be a situation where we're just kind of hanging out in the holding pattern. And I know when OTAs come around, you know, we're going to be talking about it again because he won't be involved, or maybe not OTAs, but the voluntary mini camp. But yeah, it's just one of those things that's going to drag on, unfortunately. It's just going to continue to be a talking point. But ultimately, I do think that we're going to learn some things from the draft in terms of what some of these other teams do, in particular with the Browns and what they potentially do or don't do with Shedeur Sanders or any other quarterbacks. I think we'll have a much better idea of, you know, the select one or two or three teams where he's going to land.
You know, I am a little bit surprised on two fronts. Number one, that the national media, Joe, has so misread this situation. And I've made a point of pointing it out time and again from multiple big-name NFL people who don't understand or can't wrap their brain around the fact that the Falcons control this situation, not Kirk Cousins.
Right, yeah.
You know, and they just seem to think that Kirk Cousins holds the cards. He doesn't. The Falcons hold all the cards. You know, because they don't understand that that's why they paid him $10 million. And Arthur Blank looked at him and said, we will do what's in the best interest of the club, which is code for, and all you have to do is know Arthur Blank speak, of your butt's going to sit on that bench and rot all season, you know, unless I get what I want.
And at least serve as maybe the best backup quarterback in the league. You know, how about that? How about that? And that's exactly what Kirk Cousins doesn't want. So I think that the Falcons have pretty much always held the two most important pieces of leverage in this whole negotiation, which is one, they hold the contract. So they ultimately do control kind of what happens despite any other, you know,
little trades or anything else.
Exactly. If the Falcons hold the contract, they've got the most important piece. And Kirk Cousins wants to start in the NFL. That's an advantage for the Falcons because the imperative is on him to make the move happen. And so ultimately, I think that's what will happen.
Joe Patrick, Falcons Insider. All right, so the Falcons have, I don't know, 10, 11, 12 million right now. And post June 1, they could create, you know, with a trade of Kirk Cousins, an additional 20, 21 million. I mean, they could be playing with $30 to $35 million suddenly in a free agent market post June 1 here. Do you expect that the Falcons will they hang on to that money and try and clear even more cap space for next year, or are they going to be active, you know, post June 1 here and trying to make a couple of big, you know, pickups here.
I think they have like every chance to be as active as they really want to be still from this point on. And, you know, it's, let's remember last year they signed two pieces that they at least thought were going to be really important, and they had the kind of, you know, they were willing to move draft capital and, you know, outlay certain amounts of money to be able to make that happen. They also, you know, did something similar with a player like Calais Campbell the year before, where they gave him, you know, a bunch of money on a one-year deal, and he was a really important player for that defensive line, maybe their best defensive lineman actually that year. And so with what you have, if you are expecting to get that money back from Kirk Cousins in the post June 1, you can still actually even be active kind of with that money right now. For example, let's say if Trey Hendrickson had the potential to come to Atlanta and they just needed to make the salaries work, well, they could still, you know, renegotiate some things. They could still give themselves enough cap room in the immediate future to be able to ink that deal and maybe backload the contract as well. Obviously, you're not paying as much of that contract in that first year, so at least you can just kind of get it in. And then once you get the cap relief, you know, that's going to make it a lot more easy to handle. But I think that if you're just expecting to get that money back on the cap, then you can do a lot of things with it, whether that's post June 1 closer, you know, in that training camp period where you do have some injuries that occur that you need to fill in some gaps. And maybe they will leave some in reserve there, but you could also use that money in the more immediate future if something is to materialize, which, you know, in the Trey Hendrickson case, that would be a player that I would think the Falcons would be interested in.
Well, I'm sure they are. I mean, you know, yeah. I haven't given up on that one. I haven't really spoken to it a lot.
Yeah. But it seems like it's got more legs on it now than it did a week ago so.
Right. You know, I mean, if you're Terry Fontenot, I mean, yes, you know, Mike Green is nice. James Fitz Jr. is nice. He's Trey Hendrickson. If Cincinnati wants a number one, you know what? I mean, he changes the dynamic for you in a way the others don't.
The average first round edge draft pick in their rookie year has about 4.5 sacks. That's basically what you should expect to get if you're, you know, going out and getting, let's say it's Mike Green or Shamar Stewart, pick your favorite edge rusher that the Falcons can potentially get that 15th pick. You probably shouldn't be expecting a whole lot more than about 4.5 sacks. You hope to get it, obviously, and there's that possibility, but it's very unlikely. And with a player like Trey Hendrickson, you're more like guaranteeing yourself double-digit sacks with the upside of getting up like above 15, which is obviously makes him an all-pro, which he's been the last couple of years.
You know, somebody asked me, Joe, well, if they have this money, why wouldn't they have just kept Grady? And besides saying, you know, I can't know for sure. I mean, they're not discussing it with me. I the only thing I tell you is the sense that I get. And the sense that I get is that I think Jeff Ulbrich kind of looked at things, and I'm wondering if you get the same sense, and said, why in the hell were you not playing Rukororo?
Yes, totally. Totally agree. I think it's something that I suspect is still kind of getting at the craw of Raheem Morris, and that those defensive line rotations kind of never really got to where they should have been with player like Root. Because I thought when he got on the field, John, people think it kind of like looked down upon his rookie year, and I get it because he didn't really play a lot, to your point. And he obviously had the injury that kept him out as well. But I always thought his reps were really good when he got on the field. And he was one of the few players where, you know, there's like a big run stop or something. You go, oh, who was that? And it was Rukororo. And even he was flashing that back in those preseason games, if you recall, against the Ravens, I believe it was. He had a couple big stops there. And just an athletic, powerful player who I think is really developing his skills. And I agree with you. I think that they expect him to not just slot into a starting role, but I think be, you know, pretty impactful. And obviously you kind of get out, it's a little bit of a risk to say that and to expect that if you're a coaching staff, considering there isn't the, you know, he doesn't have the reps, basically doesn't have, he hasn't shown it basically at the NFL level, but I do think that they really believe it with what they're seeing behind the scenes. And the other thing about Grady is that I don't think, you know, it was one of those things where the Falcons wanted to bring him back. It's not one of those things where they were just like, you know what, we're done with you. You know, good luck elsewhere. They wanted to try to bring him back, but there was obviously some kind of measures that they needed to take. And it was an untenable situation with him playing, you know, how he was at, you know, over $20 million a year. You just had to reduce that number. And ultimately, you know, Grady made what he felt was the best decision for him. And, you know, I don't think that makes it any easier on the Falcons this year, but I think it's something that they felt like they were able to go out and kind of again, not replace him, but get the best kind of great value brand version of Grady Jarrett possible for a lot less money in Morgan Fox.
We're talking with Joe Patrick. Joe, I want to go back to quarterback. Do you expect the team to make a move in terms of a backup quarterback before they – all right, you have mini camps coming up here. You could, in theory, because you've seen Case Keenum go to the Bears, Joe Milton go to Dallas, Trey Lance has got a new job here. You could, in theory, sign a guy for your practice squad. I don't know, a Jimmy Garoppolo, a Joe Flacco, a Drew Lock, somebody of that nature, somebody a veteran. But does that? I don't know if that. If you can, I mean, you'd love to get him in and get him into the program, into the culture, get him with Zach Robinson. But I'm afraid that if you do, you tip your hand on the whole issue with Kirk Cousins about being the backup,
right?
Because, oh, you're just full of crap. You know, he's not
right.
The backup.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. I do wonder, you know, I'm just thinking about it kind of in real time. You would think that they would want to get somebody in so they can give them the playbook. You know, if they just have the playbook in their hands for, you know, an extra, you know, couple months or whatever it might be, that's significant time that player can, you know, just learn on his own, basically. And especially if it's a, you know, veteran quarterback, really start to, you know, get familiarized with the concepts. You know, I don't know about whether the thing is if they're showing their hand by doing that, because, you know, teams, if they want to get Kirk, they're going to have to come trade for him anyways. And I feel like those teams that might want to come trade for him are really going to be motivated to do that for their own, you know, because their rosters need Kirk Cousins basically at that point. And I don't know if, you know, they could really kind of be, deterred by the fact that, you know, the Falcons are very willing to make the deal happen. I thought it was interesting at the owners' meetings just how open the team was and kind of publicly messaging for the first time that, you know, they were, you know, would kind of gladly facilitate making a move happen, but they just weren't going to give him away because ultimately he does still hold some value on the roster at that position as a backup quarterback.
You know, I saw one projection, and they're a billion, I get that, that Pittsburgh, you know, is kind of cut off Aaron Rodgers talks, at least at the moment, where Pittsburgh would trade up with the Falcons to 15 to draft Jackson Dart. You know, I don't know if that's the case or not. But the one that kind of I think I find most intriguing here is what would be Minnesota's aversion to Kirk? Would Kirk have an aversion to going back?
Yes.
Would Minnesota have an aversion to bringing him in? If J.J. McCarthy's not the guy, then there's no better quarterback in the world than for a guy that when he walks in the door knows everything, do you have to teach him anything? No, I know it. I got it.
John, I am totally with you. I think this is the one that people are not talking about nearly enough, and I understand why there are obvious reasons it wouldn't happen. It's not often you would see a situation like this, especially with a quarterback kind of, you know, just returning to a team after 1 year, after kind of being unable to come to a contract agreement. But obviously, if they were to trade for him, they would be, you know, accepting of the contract. And honestly, Kirk Cousins is a cheap quarterback by NFL standards to trade for him. So that is why he's an appealing option for some of these teams. And yeah, it's got, you know, he would know the offense. He has his house there, I believe, still, you know, they could just like, it would be a very seamless process for him to get back. It does come back to that situation though, of would Kirk actually want that with JJ McCarthy kind of lurking in the background? Like, is that something that he would actually be up for? I think if he is, then that is a deal that makes a lot of sense. And I have to say, I feel like the Vikings, they're doing their best to try to kind of like hold up JJ McCarthy as this franchise quarterback that they believe in. But I think that they know that they cannot just go into this season kind of banking on him because it's a complete kind of wild card. He had some of the fewest reps amongst those first round quarterbacks going into last year, some of the biggest holes in his game versus some of these other guys. So I think that Minnesota will be obviously signing a quarterback. We kind of know that based on how active they've been talking to some of these guys. And I think Kirk has got to be in the mix there.
One final thing here in terms of offseason acquisitions. I don't know that they can do, maybe they do it in the draft. I don't know. It could be. Do you think the Falcons make a run with the money that they have? You talked about a guy like, you know, a big guy like a Trey Hendrickson. I mean, a really big guy. Would they make a run at a veteran wide receiver to fill out that room?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think that is an area where they're just like, maybe in an ideal world, if they didn't have the cap situation they were in, they had a lot better contracts. Definitely think they could go out and get somebody, especially in that kind of Ray McLeod role, not necessarily to replace Ray, but just to kind of support him, maybe, you know, be able to rotate another body into some of these positions. But ultimately, John, I just don't think they really have the capital based on the needs they also have to fill when you talk about center. Are they done at safety? Obviously, we've talked about edge and, you know, potentially adding to the interior. There's just so many areas I think they need to address before that. Right. I ultimately don't see it.
Well, Joe, it's going to be a fascinating offseason here. 2 weeks and change to the NFL draft. I'm going to go on record as saying, send Joe to the draft, okay? Send Joe to the draft. You ever been to Lambeau?
I've not. Oh, it looks amazing.
I went up there and fell in love. I went, okay, this is
real. I've looked around it on Google Maps. I've done the street, walked the streets of Green Bay on Google Maps.
It shouldn't work. You know, I mean, it's an old stadium in a neighborhood. Right. There's a True Value Hardware store you have to park at a block away. You know, it's like, okay, this shouldn't, but it works. And you're like, okay, this is pretty cool. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Titletown, yeah. It all kind of
works. Football heritage.
Yeah. All right, Joe. Well, just stay in touch and let's keep talking here. And we'll see what happens headed up to Green Bay. Thanks much.
Sounds good. Always enjoy, John. Thank you.